puts me in the parking contested area formerly known as Southeast Division Street. However, I fully support the amendment number 34 and 51. And you might ask yourselves why that would be. That might be slightly illogical. But that's out of love, and love for my city, and the desire that I want others to love it as just like I do, and have the opportunity to do so. The best way for we humans to love something is to know it. The best way for us to know a city is to get out of our cars. So the more that we enable people to, as transportation planners might say, shift modes, get out of our cars and access our city in different ways and find the wonder in our city, the more people might love it. And I hope that more people can do so and enjoy it the way that I do.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Who'd like to go next?
I'll go next. My name is Tony Schwartz. I live at 1729 Northwest Irving in the Alphabet Historic District, and I live directly across from two of the parcels that City Council is considering essentially spot zoning with regard to Option A and Option C. I'm here in favor of the reduction of the 4-to-1 FAR to 2-to-1 FAR in the Alphabet Historic District. I will say that I was a little concerned with regard to the owners of the Ballon Wright site. I heard one of them essentially say in the press that he would without doubt file a claim under Measure 49 if the 4-to-1 to 2-to-1 reduction occurred. I read Measure 49. Measure 49 only applies to just compensation when there's a regulation that impairs the establishment of single-family residences, and your city attorney agrees with me. I will say that I would ask you to not only be aware of, but also reject that sort of legal bullying tactic. With regard to my house, I bought into the Alphabet Historic District in 2007. I did so buying a house that was built in 1884, 19 years after Abraham Lincoln was shot. It has stood the test of time. I bought in knowing that I had a duty and responsibility to maintain that house, but also as a steward of the Historic District to try to maintain this Historic District, both in terms of existing structures and also new development. New development would be essentially developed in compatible and comparable size and scope and architectural featuring. I firmly believe that the district was established with generations in mind, not just crises from one year to another. Crises come, crises go. I know this city is suffering from rental and housing shortage, but no one predicted the 2008 Great Depression. With the new administration, we have no idea what's going to happen with regard to fiscal and monetary policy. Nothing is for certain, but what is for certain right now is this district. And the district wants to survive, and it wants to survive with comparable and compatible buildings into the future. So I ask you, with everything that's been said before, including from the NWDA, to reduce the FAR from 4-to-1 to 2-to-1. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Marty Stiven. I'm here today on behalf of Richard Passantini, who represents various members and of the Passantini family and the properties that they own in Portland. I've appeared before you several times, and I'm here today in support of four of your amendments. The first one is amendment number 14 at 60th and Belmont. Thank you to Commissioner Novak for sponsoring it. It adds the second Passantini property to the CM2 zoning. We had two pieces of property there. One was proposed to be zoned CM2, and one was left behind. This simply adds that property to it and expands the node for CM2 zoning, and we are, of course, in support of that. The second one is Amendment 15, and it affects our property at 7200 and 7400 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue. It's proposed to be zoned CM2, and the addition of this amendment puts a D overlay on it. I've talked to the staff. I understand the history behind that, and we support that D overlay zone. The third option is in regards to the drive-through windows and the quick vehicle servicing areas, and we're in support of Commissioner Saltzman's amendment 28B. If you remember, we have asked for zoning to be changed to CE on several outlying properties because of the timing, we think, redevelopment opportunities. You haven't seen it, seen your way to doing that yet, but we still would like to support the option for the 28B, which would allow new drive-through windows and quick vehicle servicing in the CE zones. And lastly, Amendment number 53, if you will recall, we submitted testimony that, about property at 9th and Gibbs and on Markham Hill, thinking that, knowing that it's a down zone from the commercial storefront zoning to CM1. We're happy to see, Commissioner Novak, with this amendment that you are willing to take a second look at several areas, including the Markham Hill, and post acknowledgement, and we would support and hope encourage you to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for
Thanks
your time
lot.
And all of
Thank
these.
Thank you all.
57, Tim Ramos. 58, Garrett Stevenson. 59, Evan Heitman. They'll be followed by Pete Ford, Allison Reynolds, and Denny Martinez.
Okay. Mr. Ramos, I think you're first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For your record, Tim Ramos, I'm here today supporting Amendment 22, and I don't believe there's any real disagreement about the goal for this property, which is a one-acre site at 58th in Sylvan. The owners, I think, along with the staff, agree that it's a great site for middle housing, and there needs to be an infill of the missing sidewalk frontage along the front of the site. The real question is how to get there. Failing to act on the amendment will produce only delay. It will not advance obtaining housing or advance building the sidewalk. The argument for delay has been the strange assertion that absent a quasi-judicial zone change accompanying a development request, the city is powerless to condition the owners to build a sidewalk. You heard that twice in your work session. I think if, as you travel the city, it is apparent that that statement can't be true, because throughout the city, you observe sidewalks, street frontages, all being constructed as the product of conditions on projects where there's been no zone change. The reason is that you have plenty of authority in your code, and you enforce that authority. That's true on 58th and other projects along the way. The staff report also makes the statement that the site lacks good transit access. And to that, I will respond with the report I've submitted to you, which is the most recent work of PDOT on the street, which speaks to the site immediately adjacent and says the site is well served by transit and comfortable and safe walking routes between the site and all stops are available. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Garrett Stevenson, representing Columbia Steel Castings. Here to talk about amendment number 43, testifying today in support of that amendment, and I wanted to say that we appreciate working with staff on this. This, for the record, was a minor change to the proposed bike and ped path that was mapped over our client's property, and staff was very easy to work with when we came and said that we'd like to move that slightly, still on the property, but out of Columbia Steel's operational areas, which included their circulation roadways as well as their substation. So I urge you to approve this. I think it's a good compromise, and I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Evan Heitman. I'm testifying in favor of Amendments 34 and 51. Minimum parking requirements are a bad policy, plain and simple. They don't create more parking overall. They don't ease parking congestion or traffic congestion. They incentivize car ownership, and they subsidize car owners at the expense of everyone else. So on parking supply, wouldn't you think that minimums result in more parking? But actually in Northwest, where we don't have minimums, we've seen that construction is producing minimums at a greater ratio than would be required if minimums were required. The difference is just that some buildings have more parking than would be required, and some buildings have less. But overall, the ratio is comparable to what would be required elsewhere in the city. So eliminating minimums allows more choice in housing. Regarding parking congestion, you might think that minimums will free up street spaces, but that's not how it works. Minimums force builders to build parking, but nobody can force tenants to rent those spaces if street parking is free. So as long as there's any space available on the street, that's where people will put their cars. The only time when people will rent space in a lot is if the street parking is so congested that it's really difficult to find a space. So at no point do minimums improve parking congestion on the street. On the other hand, if street parking is not free, then you don't need to force developers to build parking. You don't need minimums because they'll build as much as their tenants demand. So set this price of street parking appropriately, and drivers will be able to find a place to park when they need it. You can also eliminate minimums to allow more choice in housing. Regarding traffic congestion, if you think congestion is bad now, imagine what it would be like if we continue to grow at the same car use and ownership rates that we have currently. We simply don't have space on our roads for that many cars. So we need to stop incentivizing car ownership and driving as we currently do. And we can start doing that by eliminating parking minimums. Climate change is another issue addressed by minimums. Driving is the most inefficient way to get around a city. So we need to stop requiring developers to incentivize driving through minimums. Wealth inequality is also a part of this. And I'm out of time, so thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Pete Ford, Allison Reynolds, Denny Martinez. They'll be followed by Deborah Romero, Siri Shelty, and Tamara DeRitter. And then we do have two more in addition after that.
Okay. Looks like we're going to get there. All right, come on up.
Pete here. Denny Martinez. And Deborah on Northeast 23rd. Siri on Northwest Gleason, come on up.
Who was the second person you said?
Denny Martinez, Deborah Romero.
Okay. We got a full compliment. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Allison Reynolds, and I'm with Perkins Coie, and I'm here on behalf of several of our clients, as provided in our written materials. I don't know if you guys have those in front of us, but we have provided a table, essentially, that has these requests on it. And we are asking you to adopt some new amendments today that didn't make the list, and to add several of these clients' properties to item 53, which is for later staff consideration. Almost all of the changes that we're asking for are to keep our clients' current allowed uses from becoming non-conforming under the new code, or to bring long-time non-conforming uses into conformance under the new code. The items that are shaded in blue on that table are changes that are needed to prevent uses from becoming non-conforming, which we feel is especially crucial. Many of those changes can be accomplished by only prohibiting new uses in certain categories. Two examples of this are, one, our client Broadmoor's golf course use, which will become a non-conforming open space use when industrial zoning and the prime industrial overlay are applied to its property. Prohibiting only new open space uses in the industrial overlay would solve this non-conforming issue for them. Additionally, the ground floor commercial use in our client Solterra's new multifamily development in the Williams Corridor will also become non-conforming when that site is rezoned from RX to RH. RH does not allow ground floor commercial on sites that aren't served by light rail transit, which the Williams Corridor is not. Here again, prohibiting only new commercial uses in that zone would solve that non-conforming use issue. And if you guys do not feel that you can accommodate our request in today's planning action, we ask that you add a new item 55 to the list, which directs staff to consider changes to avoid new and continued non-conformance on the properties we've identified and potentially others.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Siri. I have a house on Northwest Gleason Street behind the historical homes on Hoyt. And I agree with all of my neighbors, Tony and Vicki and Joselle. And hope you go for the option A.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Deborah Romarin. And I'm actually here to urge you to maintain some adequate parking requirements in mixed-use and commercial zones. If we need more study to best predict what adequate parking will mean, let's do it. The alternative is more congested neighborhood streets like Northwest Portland, where parking is a blood sport. As more retail and residential units are built without adequate parking, street parking obviously becomes more scarce and the arduous task of finding parking more stress-filled. Businesses are also hurt. All, and I mean all of the businesses along one arterial street in my old Seattle neighborhood went broke and closed for lack of customers who could no longer park nearby when adjacent construction went in with little parking. That building that housed those businesses now stands empty. The landlord is deeply desperate. This year, construction housing three new businesses, including a 150-capacity restaurant and a theater music club, were built with no parking, zero, for staff and patrons right next to my small apartment building. My building has been there for 90 years, and now for the first time, my residents come home to face the anxiety of having to circle and hunt for non-existent parking. How is that fair to ruin my business by not requiring any parking for some new business traffic? And further, many of my residents would have to take multiple buses to get to and from work, thus doubling and in some cases tripling their commute. Time is one of our most precious commodities. There seems to be an inference, or an implication, I should say, that people who want a car are somehow selfish and addicted to a luxurious lifestyle. I live in a small one-bedroom house, apartment. I don't own a second home, a boat, an RV, a motorized toys. I don't have kids that would have used enormous more resources and used more rentable spaces. But I have owned the same very small fuel-efficient car for the past 17 years, which I need to run errands for my business, visit friends who live in many parts of Greater Portland, and patronize the arts and local businesses. But already, I find myself often choosing malls in which to shop. And avoiding small local businesses I used to frequent because their on-street parking is so clogged. We are not New York City with a mature, extensive subway system. Give people incentives to move to electric, hybrid, and smaller fuel-efficient cars, but they still need to park them, and they surely should be able to park without engaging in daily, high-stress parking wars. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Could you tell me again where you live, please?
Where I live? 3512 Northeast 23rd.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
And our last three, please, Tamara DeRitter, Tom Kwaki, and Adam Hurstein.
Adam, are you here? Okay, Tamara, I think you're next.
Okay. Hi, I'm Tamara DeRitter. I am here on behalf of Rose City Park Neighborhood Association as their chairperson. At our last board meeting, which was on the 15th, our board did support the letter that I had written on October 13th dealing with asking the council to address adequate parking. As it is written in the comprehensive plan, the policy is 9.58, and it says, strive to provide adequate but not excessive off-street parking where needed, but instead the mayor decides to take away the required parking that me and the other neighborhood representatives worked so hard on for a full year back in 2012 to get in place. So the board also approved, they went through and looked at what was proposed and opposed the removal of the minimum on-street parking requirements. And the reasoning behind that is, number one, incentive. By keeping minimum off-street parking requirements, these parking spaces can be used as trade collateral for increased bicycle, pedestrian, and community amenities. B, needed for off-street parking capacity. It creates off-street parking that could be used as shared future public parking. And it supplements the needed nearby off-street parking for the handicapped accessible spaces, which is not necessarily on street. It supports the local business clientele, and it retains future income generating options. So it such as retains a leverage with the property owners and builders to bring them to the table to create future parking management options, such as a fee-based system for them to pay in lieu of creating the off-street parking. We lose that leverage. So keep it for now until we go through the process and create a management system. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Karwacki.
Tom Karwacki, Vice Chair of University Park Neighborhood Association and Land Use Chair. The University of Portland has a conditional use master plan that was unanimously adopted, accepted, and endorsed by the Neighborhood Association. It was adopted by the city 2 years ago and has been in place. The current proposal doesn't always address that, and I think the particular amendments number 33 and 31 are particularly important. They actually return the staff proposal to actually what is in the conditional use master plan. And so what we're asking for is to make sure that the university and the neighborhood are kept whole through this process and not hurt by the process, which it would be without these two amendments. In addition to that, there's an issue of the boundaries. And in the conditional use master plan, that was a specific, the master plan applied only if the certain two properties that are islanded, the Mercers and the Hilders, and then also the Baxter and McCormick property, were actually controlled by the university. The proposal before you on the campus institutional structure includes those properties, but the university does not control them. And so there's a real concern that you may be opening yourself up to a lawsuit even because you're actually limiting the these particular property owners from actually doing something with them. So we are asking you to reword that particular section of the institutional campus map with respect to return it back to what it was in the master plan.
You mean including them in the...
Yeah, it includes them, but with a proviso that only if the university or another institution controls them, and otherwise you're precluding them from selling them to anyone else.
I get it.
Yeah. Okay. Is there an amendment that does that?
Well, so far, that is, I think, what Mr. Kuffner has asked for. We are asking for it as well, that it actually be a little more tailored than what it is right now. It's very easy to just draw a map, a line, and say everything on this side is this and everything on that side is something else. But if, in fact, the master plan was there, it would. It said that only if they actually controlled the property, either through a lease or ownership.
I'm glad that Dr. Kuffner is still here as well because I want to commend both of you. You do work really well together, the institution and the neighborhood. Whenever I've dropped in unannounced at the University Park Neighborhood Association, you have always been there, so thank you.
And we want to work continue, and this would be very important for that relationship. Thank you.
And is Mr. Hurstein really the last person signed up? So, Adam, if you don't mind a reference at your expense or at least in your honor, in the creation of the world, Adam was the first man, and in the creation of this multi-year comprehensive plan, you're the last.
My name is Adam Hurstein. I am asking City Council to pass Amendment 34 to the comprehensive plan to eliminate minimum parking requirements in mixed-use zones. If we are to be a city that provides housing for people, not for cars, and we want to discourage private automobile use, we must eliminate parking minimums along transit corridors. Given the fact that the next 4 years will likely be disastrous for combating climate change, now more than ever, it is imperative that cities take the lead in fighting against this impending disaster. There is also much uncertainty regarding housing affordability over the next 4 years. We have no idea what may come from the federal government, which is why it's important for cities to take the lead to provide affordable housing. Requiring parking necessarily increases housing prices in neighborhoods where people have other transportation options. We should instead require fees for on-street parking so the city can better manage the parking supply with more flexible space. I live in Inner Southeast and get around primarily by foot, bus, and bike. My wife and I enjoy walking to the Division Streets and supporting the many restaurants and bars along the street there. One of the reasons I moved to Richmond is its high level of walkability and bikeability, and I believe adding more cars to the neighborhood is counter to the desirability of my neighborhood. Please do not hesitate to pass Amendment 34 to eliminate minimum parking requirements in mixed-use zones. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and that is the last word in terms of public testimony. So thank you. So I'm going to close the public hearing, but leave the record open until 5 p.m. tomorrow. 5 p.m. tomorrow for written testimony. And any questions or inquiries for staff at this point? I know we have work sessions ahead. Well, thank you three very much for being our last testifiers. We'll get Eric back up for a minute and talk about the process ahead, and then we'll actually be done a little early, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the main order of business is you also have to continue this item until Tuesday so that the public knows that you're going to have that deliberation so that we don't have to re-notify anybody.
All right, so we're continuing this item until Tuesday's work session, right?
It's actually a regular council session because you'll be voting on the amendments.
Session. Okay, that's what we're doing. We're continuing it until Tuesday.
Anything else? 9 a.m. Tuesday.
9 a.m. Tuesday, and again, written testimony can be submitted until 5 p.m. tomorrow, and we'll have more
allowed to bring new amendments on Tuesday or not?
You can just be aware that you won't have the benefit of as much public feedback about that. You can, if you heard something tonight that causes you to make an amendment to your amendment or something different, that's possible.
Okay. Yeah, that could happen. Well, we'll have more chances to thank our hardworking and long-running effort by the staff. But thank you very much, and we'll adjourn until next week, and we'll see you Tuesday. Good job. Hey, Jim.